Next up, Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program produced by Montana Public Radio. Campaign Beat is hosted by Sally Mock and features Lee Newspaper's Capitol reporter Holly Michaels and University of Montana political science professor and Mansfield Center fellow Rob Saldine. Here's Sally.
Holly, Governor Steve Bullock this week ordered everyone living in counties with more than 4 active cases of coronavirus to wear a mask indoors in public spaces. And this was not unexpected given that cases in Montana continue to rise, but it's not without political risk.
Yeah, I think Bullock waited about as long as possible as he could to put this mandate into place. He had, for a while, as we saw cases exponentially rise in Montana, especially once we hit July, said that, you know, he supported local governments putting in mask mandates. A couple did around the state. But I think, you know, new daily case growth, we set record highs 5 times just in what we've seen of July so far. We also went from 55 active cases to more than 1,200 as of this recording. So, you know, things were really going in the wrong direction and pretty aggressively. You know, Bullock did sort of get to test the waters as counties and some cities around the state put in mandates, and you saw that there was, you know, some compliance. You know, a lot of people, I think, were asking for him to put this in, but there's also some pretty strong opposition that we saw. You know, Gallatin County is a good example. They tried to hold a meeting on a mask mandate and weren't even able to do it because of people filling a room beyond capacity and refusing to wear masks or leave.
People opposed to the mask mandate, Holly, say it infringes on their constitutional rights and personal freedom. But here's what the governor had to say to that.
And an individual might think that they have a constitutional right to get sick if they so choose, but they don't have a constitutional right to get other people sick.
And I'm not sure that argument is sinking in, Holly, with everyone, including some Republican members of a legislative committee that tried to meet this week at the Capitol.
Yeah, we saw the first interim legislative committee that met after the mask mandate went into place. There were 3 Republican members of the committee participating in a room at the Capitol and a legislative staffer as well. The staffer was the only one wearing a mask. So Democrats who were attending the meeting virtually after a morning break said that, you know, unless Republicans would put on face masks to comply with the order, they were going to walk out of the meeting, which would leave them without a quorum, so they'd be unable to take any action the rest of the day. Republican State Representative Derek Skies, who's from Kalispell, said that, you know, he understood Democrat stance and respected it, but he took a stance we've seen some businesses around the state opposed to mask orders also take, of saying they feel, you know, health privacy laws stop them from asking people if they were to have a health issue that would prevent them or exempt them from wearing a mask. So Skies said, you know, he wasn't going to see if people had exemptions, if they needed to wear masks or not, and just continue the meeting. So, you know, I think we've seen masks are pretty politicized already, even though they're a known and proven tool that slow the spread of the virus. And we heard Bullock say in that press conference, you know, he cited that both the state and U.S. Supreme Court have upheld health measures to spread or slow the spread of contagion before. And state law also gives the executive the ability to address public health deficiencies. So I think we're going to continue to see this fought sort of in the public sphere, but we've got the mandate for now. It'll be interesting to see going forward how people comply.
Rob, conservative broadcaster Aaron Flint predicts, quote, mass civil disobedience in response to the governor's order, and he calls the mask, quote, Bullock's burkas.
Yeah, right. You know, it's hard to know, I think, how much backlash there really is. My sense is that it's fairly limited at this point to people who listen to Aaron Flint's statewide program. You know, we've also seen this elsewhere. You know, I recall that group that demonstrated at the Michigan Capitol with their guns, right? It was a highly visible example of a backlash, but it was contained to a pretty small group in terms of total numbers. And I suspect that the people who are strongly opposed to Bullock's new order here aren't randomly distributed in the electorate, but they're basically all people who weren't going to vote for Bullock under any condition, right? It's not like Aaron Flint was all lined up behind Bullock until this order came down, right? There was never any chance that Aaron Flint was going to support Bullock. But the larger dynamic, you know, we talked about this a little bit last spring, as I recall, a lot of governors, including Bullock, have been seen as doing a very good job in handling the virus. And by and large, you know, the public has recognized the gravity of the situation and has complied with the steps that Bullock and these other governors have taken to slow the thing down. But while most governors saw their job approval ratings go up in the spring, there's never been any guarantee that that dynamic was going to last forever, particularly if you're in a position, as many of them are now, of having to announce new restrictions. You know, but regardless of the politics of the situation, the reality is that Bullock's still governor and he's still got a job to do.
New television ads in Bullock's Senate race with incumbent Steve Daines are targeting Daines for his positions on health care. And here's a new one from the Majority Forward pack.
The coronavirus has been tough on us. The only ones profiting off it, drug and insurance companies. So look at what Senator Daines has been doing in Washington. Daines voted to give them billions in tax breaks as they jacked up prescription prices. Daines even voted to let insurance companies deny coverage for people with pre-existing conditions like diabetes, asthma, and cancer. Tell Senator Daines to put Montana first, not the drug and insurance companies.
And Rob, Daines' past and present position on coverage of pre-existing conditions has been getting a lot of press, most of it negative.
Yeah, you know, this is just such a hard issue for Republicans. You know, they've been, just as a party, you know, very unclear about what their alternative to the Affordable Care Act is. Now we hear them talking about how important it is to deal with pre-existing conditions and protect those people, but a lot of their past votes suggest otherwise, and that most certainly is the case with Steve Daines. And, you know, just this week, Sally, I noticed that the Washington Post looked at Daines' record and some of the things he's saying out on the campaign trail and gave him a bunch of Pinocchios for it, right? Saying that he wasn't telling the truth. And, yeah, you know, the whole big dynamic here, I think, is just that if healthcare is at the center of this campaign between Bullock and Daines, you know, that's a huge advantage to Bullock, right? Democrats in general are trusted much more on healthcare than are Republicans. And, of course, we're in the middle of a pandemic, which raises those concerns to the forefront of people's minds.
Holly, one of the many still unanswered questions during this pandemic is how and when schools will reopen. It's up to local districts, but they're looking for guidance from state leaders. And state school superintendent Elsie Arnson, who's running for reelection, is having a very public fight with Governor Bullock, accusing him of cutting her out of discussions about schools reopening.
Yeah, this all started when Bullock and Arnson released their own and uncoordinated plans about how to reopen public schools in what now is really just a matter of weeks away. Both offices, they released their plans within about a half an hour of each other on the same day at the start of this month, and you know, said that they hadn't seen what each other had proposed. Bullock's office has said they want local school officials to, you know, look at both plans and also take input from public health officials as they navigate reopening. Arnson says that she's heard from local districts they really want one coordinated state plan, not two. Earlier this week, what they were in disagreement about, Bullock made an announcement that $75 million of the $1.5 billion the state got in CARES Act funding, he was going to put toward helping school districts get some of the supplies that would be necessary to reopen, like personal protective equipment, other things to adapt buildings. Arnson's office shot out a statement a couple hours after that announcement, and she also tweeted out that statement, so pretty publicly putting it out there, saying that she thinks Bullock's been making these siloed decisions on COVID-19 responses. She said that her office wasn't brought to the table when talking about how to use that money in discussions about that. Bullock's office responded in a separate statement saying they did make Arnson's office aware, and Arnson said that decision was made without bringing her to the table, and Bullock's office responded that they did make her office aware, and they, you know, questioned why she would be upset about the announcement of $75 million going towards schools. Arnson, again, she accused Bullock of making decisions about schools for political gain, but I'm not sure if there's any really clear winning decisions or about schools right now. I think there's a lot of conflict about what's the right step in the fall, and I don't know if anybody's winning in those decisions right now.
Holly, Senator Daines released his latest fundraising numbers, $5 million in the last quarter, but that's still less than the $7.7 million that Bullock raised.
Yeah, I think last week when Rob was talking about Bullock's fundraising, he said, you pointed out, we hadn't seen Daines at that point, which probably meant the numbers weren't great, and I think that's what we saw this week. Bullock has been outraising Daines over the quarters since the governor joined the race in March. Daines had a big advantage. He'd been raising money basically since he's taken seat in 2014, and he still is up overall by Bullock about $2 million, but right now, they both have about $7 million cash in the bank, so kind of a level playing field there in what they've got to spend. And they both, to point out, they both have set records in this last quarter for amount brought in the Senate race over a single fundraising quarter.
And in the House race, Democrat Kathleen Williams, she's continuing to outraise Republican Matt Rosendale.
Yeah, she brought in about $750,000 over the last quarter to Rosendale's roughly $600,000. She's pretty significantly leading him overall at $2.5 million to his $1.9 million. They're a little bit closer in cash on hand, $1.6 for Williams to $1.2 million for Rosendale. I think something to point out with both these races, the Senate race a little more, is these numbers don't really capture the onslaught of money being spent by outside groups, especially in the Senate race, and we're only going to see that increase as we get closer to November.
Rob, two new polls show Montana's congressional and gubernatorial races are very close, with the Republican candidates barely leading or tied with the Democratic candidates. And the polls also measure the candidates' approval ratings, and one of those ratings stood out to me in the race for governor. While 47% of those polled say they have an unfavorable opinion of Greg Gianforte, 48% say they're not sure of their opinion of Mike Cooney. How can voters, Rob, be undecided about someone who's held public office as long as Cooney has?
Well, so right. I mean, the big takeaway from the polls is that all these races are close. They're all within the margin of error, which means they're in toss-up territory. You know, on Cooney, I'm not entirely surprised. In terms of prominence and public awareness, being lieutenant governor just isn't anywhere close to being governor or a member of the congressional delegation. But regardless, I'd say in this governor's race, a key dynamic here is that Cooney is a blank slate for lots of Montanans. And that's the kind of situation in which advertising can be really, really persuasive in shaping voters' views because they don't have any priors, right? Gianforte, by contrast, he's very well known and people think what they think of him. And those pre-existing impressions just aren't going to be as easy to change. So a real key in this campaign is going to be how Cooney gets defined for voters who aren't familiar with him. And I'd be pretty worried right now if I was in the Cooney campaign, concerned that they're losing that race to define their candidate. At least here in Missoula, I see a lot of ads up that are defining Cooney as basically an entrenched, corrupt political hack, and not much of a response from the Cooney people. And again, that 48% of people who don't know who the guy is, well, that's really bad if this impression that the Republicans are putting out there takes hold. I don't know if the Cooney people are trying to save some money, but, you know, if their candidate gets defined before the fall here, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you got for the last few weeks of the campaign.
And those ads are even more important at a time when you can't do the usual sort of retail campaigning of face-to-face meeting with constituents and voters.
Absolutely.
Well, summer is heating up, and the races are too. And Rob and Holly, stay cool, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Sally.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program produced by Montana Public Radio. Campaign Beat features University of Montana political science professor and Mansfield Center fellow Rob Saldine and Lee Newspaper's Capital reporter Holly Michaels and host Sally Mock. Join us next week for more analysis of Montana politics.